be hard to work and look at that face over there.
The makers of Bluebonnet Margarine and Tenderleaf Tea present the Fred Allen Show, with Fred's guest, Mary Livingston's husband, Portland Hopper, Minerva Pius as Mrs. Nussbaum, Alan Reed as Falstaff Openshaw, Parker Finley as Titus Moody, the DeMarco sisters, and Al Goodman and his orchestra. And until I start tooting the claghorn, my name is Kenny Delmar.
The Lucky Strike program starring Jack Benny with Mary Livingston, Phil Harris, Rochester, Dennis Day, and yours truly, Don Wilson.
Gentlemen, our story starts with the birth of Jack Benny in the year 1894. Just 39 years ago. It all happened in the little town of Waukegan, Illinois. The proud parents gazed with delight on the blue-eyed baby. And it was at this moment that Jack Benny's voice was heard for the first time.
Look at him, Papa. He's so cute.
Yes. We'll call him Jackie.
Doctor, I want to ask you something. Oh, I know all parents think their children are unusual, but honestly, Doctor, isn't our Jackie different from most babies? Jackie, Papa, he's got your mouth.
And he's got your nose.
And he's got your eyes.
And he's got your ears.
And look at his hair.
See, that's mine. It slipped off.
Quiet now.
Now, Mr. Benny, about my fee.
Don't worry, Doctor. Just mail your bill, and my son Jackie will send you a check.
Oh, thank you very much. Wait a minute. Your son here, Jackie, he's only a few minutes old. How can he send me a check?
I don't know how he did it, but he already saved $800.
And so the little baby began to grow and make rapid progress. At the age of 6 months, he astounded medical science because he had 32 teeth. All uppers. Ah, but Jackie was a happy little child, and all day long he used to sit in his crib playing with his toys. As he grew older, his parents gave him everything he wanted. But Jack wasn't an only child. He had a younger sister named Florence. Today, he has an older sister named Florence. The years passed, and finally, Jackie entered school. As a student, he was exceptionally bright, particularly in arithmetic.
And now for the next question, I will call on Jackie Benny.
Yes, teacher.
Now, Jackie, if you loan $10 to Albert and $5 to Irving and $15 to Tommy, and they all paid you back at once, how much money would you have?
$31.
I'm sorry, Jackie, but the correct answer is $30.
What about the interest?
Yes, I forgot. And that reminds me, Jackie, I'll pay you the money I owe you Friday.
Good. Good, good. Then I'll give you back your wristwatch.
It was easy to see that there was something about Jackie that was different from other boys. In his class, there was one little boy who lived near the stockyard. There was another whose home was above a livery stable. Still another who lived next door to a glue factory. Yet Jackie was the only kid in the class called Stinky. However, somehow he seemed to know that he was destined for a musical career. And for the next few years, he took violin lessons regularly.
No, no, no. How many times must I tell you? Smoothly, smoothly.
I'm sorry.
Play it again. Only this time, hold the bow with one hand. You're not Ty Cobb.
I'll try.
No, not today. The lesson she is over.
Oh, well. Goodbye, Professor.
Wait. You did not pay me.
Huh?
Monsieur Benny, I want my money.
Well, Jack was persistent about his violin playing. He took lessons year.
Monsieur Benny, my money.
After year.
Monsieur Benny, my money.
After year.
Monsieur Benny, my money.
It finally came the day of his graduation from elementary school. Oh, it was a proud moment for Jack and his parents. That was the day that he put on his first pair of long pants. He looked kind of bulky over his diapers. But as he was about to leave the house, his parents looked at him proudly and said,
Jackie, we're proud of you.
Thanks, Mother. And I'm so excited.
Look at him, Mama. Doesn't he look handsome?
Oh, he should look handsome. He's got your mouth.
And he's got your nose.
And he's got your eyes.
And he's still got my hair.
You'll get it. You'll get it. Let him graduate first.
And Papa, we want to get there early. He's going to play a violin solo.
Teachers and fellow graduates, your kind reception to my musical offering has filled my little heart with joy. But I don't deserve all this applause alone. Some of the glory must be shared by my music teacher. That wonderful man, that brilliant genius, that great...
Never mind the compliments, I want my money!
Jack Benny's schooling and violin study was interrupted by World War I, when he entered the armed forces. He was really much too young to go, but his father was on the draft board. Oh. And so, early in 1917, we find Jack Benny no longer a boy, but a man, ready to enter the Navy.
Goodbye, Papa.
Go already. Over and Jack went home, but his parents had moved. And so he decided on vaudeville as a career. With the advent of the radio, many new stars were made overnight. And one of the brightest was the man who always opened his show with,
"Hello again."
From this, he became a star. But when Jack realized that he was a big hit in radio, he decided to get his own program. And first, he looked for an announcer. He didn't have to look far because Don Wilson was everywhere. But one of the freshest things about Jack's show was the new talent that he always found for it. And he usually met these supporting players in unusual places. For instance, one day while he was shopping...
Oh, miss, do you have dental floss?
Yes, the May Company has everything. Oh. And say, you have all uppers, haven't you?
Hey, you notice everything. You're pretty cute. How about having dinner with me tonight?
I'm sorry, but I never let strangers buy me dinner.
Good, good. You're my type.
Look, mister, you better stop annoying me.
Hey, Mary. You want me to come over there and punch him in the nose?
It's all right, babe. I can handle him myself.
Yes, and that was how Jack first met Mary Livingston. He took her away from the May Company and made her a star. Then one day, Jack was crossing Vine Street. He stepped off the curb and...
Whoops, sorry. I almost tripped over you. I didn't see you.
I didn't see you either. I was face down.
Ha ha ha!
And so Phil Harris joined the show. Now that Jack had an orchestra, he needed a singer, and he auditioned dozens of them. One day, he listened to a newcomer, a shy, apple-cheeked young lad with the face of a cherub and a beautiful voice. And when he finished singing, Jack said,
"So your name is Dennis Day?"
"Yeah, you want to make something out of it?"
Jack hired this talented young tenor, and after 4 or 5 years, with no outside help, he almost drove Jack nuts. Now with his cast completed, Jack decided to move into a new house in Beverly Hills with his faithful Verrett, Rochester.
Boss, this house is sure beautiful.
Yes, it is, Rochester. But you know, I've been thinking.
About what?
Well, a house isn't really a home without a woman.
Want me to get married?
Never mind.
And so Jack moved into his new home, which he still resides. The house is located in Beverly Hills. The day he moved in, his next-door neighbor exclaimed,
About the fence, Benita, do you honestly think that 20 feet will be high enough?
George Jessel's humorous biographical sketch did have one basis in fact. Benjamin Kabelski was born Valentine's Day, 1894. And he did have a younger sister named Florence. When he was 6, his father bought him his first violin, and his unusual talent became evident immediately. At 16, he was hired as a violinist in a vaudeville house, leading to a job offer to travel with a vaudeville act called the Marx Brothers. His father would not allow a 17-year-old to travel the nation with this not-yet-famous quintet. As a vaudeville violinist, young Kabelski was forced to change his name to avoid confusion with violinist Jan Kabelik. For a while, he used Ben Benny. But the rising fame of vaudeville orchestra leader Ben Burney and a phone call from Burney's lawyer led to a final name change, Jack Benny. One night, while performing a violin solo for a rude, disinterested group of uniformed soldiers, a friend suggested he save the act by switching to comedy. The switch worked, and Benny Kabelski, known as Jack Benny, became a popular vaudeville comic. January 14, 1927, Benny married Sadie Marks, 14 years his junior and a distant cousin of the Marks brothers. In 1932, he made his radio debut when he was interviewed on a New York City radio station by a friend, newspaper columnist Ed Sullivan. Although it was an unscripted interview, Benny had a writer prepare some material for him. The Sullivan Show appearance was so successful, the manufacturers of Canada Dry Ginger Ale hired Jack as the master of ceremonies for a twice-weekly variety show. Here's that first performance, aired on NBC May 2nd, 1932.
Canada Dry, the champagne of ginger ales, presents a series of programs to advertise the new made-to-order Canada Dry, which you can now buy by the glass at drugstores and soda fountains. This series will feature George Olson and his music, Miss Ethel Chute, the star of many Broadway successes, and that suave comedian, dry humorist, and famous master of ceremonies, Jack Benny.
Thank you, Mr. Thorgerson. That's pretty good from a man who doesn't even know me. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Jack Benny talking and making my first appearance on the air professionally. By that I mean I'm finally getting paid, which of course will be a great relief to my creditors. I don't know why I'm here. I'm supposed to be a sort of a master of ceremonies and tell you all the things that will happen, which would happen anyway. I must introduce the different artists who could easily introduce themselves and also talk about the Canada Dry made-to-order by the glass, which is a waste of time, as you know all about it. You drink it, like it, and don't want to hear about it. So, ladies and gentlemen, a master of ceremonies is really a fellow who is unemployed and gets paid for it. I think you will like the entertainment arranged for tonight, I hope. Of course, I haven't seen any of the program myself, but I've spoken to the artists individually. They seem to think it's awfully good. The first number will be a selection by George Olson and his orchestra. I think this, being our first program together, it is no more than fair that I have you meet Mr. Olson personally. He's really a very charming fellow and one of the few directors who comes to and from his work on roller skates. That's perhaps the silliest thing that I'll say all night, I think. I might add that Mr. Olson is very, very handsome. I told you, George, I'd get that in. But as long as we are both on the air, of course, I won't have to worry about that. Oh, George, come here. I want you to say hello to the folks. Hello, everybody. That was George Olson, ladies and gentlemen. He rehearsed that speech all week. You know, this is really all play with George. He doesn't have to work at all. I might say that Mr. Olson is one of the wealthiest conductors in America. You know what I mean. He owns his own car. Of course, the other boys are in debt, too. George, what kind of a car have you?
A Saxon.
A what?
A Saxon.
A Saxon, huh? Well, that was my fault for bringing it up at all. Is it a new one, is it?
Oh, yes, a very late model.
I see. Well, you must have been in this country a long time now, haven't you, Georgia?
Yes, say, by the way, Jack, what kind of a car have you?
Me? I have a bicycle built for two. I mean, now, you can't go back any further than that, I think. Well, George, I think we ought to get started. What's the first number?
I beg your pardon, mademoiselle. It's a French number, Jack. Do you like French numbers?
Do I? Mon duck, mon duck.
Later that year, General Motors sponsored a new Benny program. Writer Harry Kahn began developing the Benny character, including some of the skin-flint jokes Ben Benny used in his vaudeville act. In 1934, General Tires assumed sponsorship. Benny's wife, using the name Mary Livingston, joined the program that year, initially doing a walk-on as a Benny fan. Guided by Harry Kahn's writing and Jack Benny's sense of good comedy, a cast of regulars was developed, using Benny as the target of most of the gags. There was a succession of band leaders, including Johnny Green, until Phil Harris joined the show in 1936. A year earlier, when sponsorship had switched to General Foods, makers of Jell-O, singer Frank Parker was replaced by Kenny Baker.
A Johnny Green up playing Anything Goes up. I mean, that was Johnny Green playing Anything Goes from the production of the same name.
Say, Jack, you're a little late, aren't you?
Yes, Don. I stopped over at the barber's for our first routine of talk.
You know. Was he a good barber?
Yes, our audience laughed at him. Oh, hello, Johnny.
Hello, Jack. I didn't recognize you. You look clean tonight.
Well, I just came from the barber shop. Got a shave and a trim.
You got a pretty close haircut there, didn't you?
Yeah.
His head looks like an airport.
Mary, don't discourage our listening audience. I mean, after all, they've just seen me as a lover in my latest picture. It's in the air. And they think I look the same up here. So don't disillusion them.
I won't. What's disillusion, Jack?
Well, Mary, on the air, you see, your listeners can't see you. All they can do is visualize, you see?
Oh, I get it. What does visualize mean?
Well, Mary, look, visualize means that they draw a mental picture of the activity up here, which enables them to conjure up the kaleidoscopic procedure. What are you laughing at?
That's the funniest haircut I've ever seen.
Forget it, will you?
Oh, Johnny, what does visualize mean?
I don't know. I just handle the music here.
Oh, just a juggler of crescendos, eh?
Say, Don, do you know any big words?
Oh, just words like strawberry, raspberry, Jell-O.
And now, wait a minute, Don. Jell-O isn't such a large word.
No, but it's the largest-selling gelatin dessert in the world, and every day millions of people eat it.
Well, I thought we'd drag that in by the heels gracefully, didn't you, Don? Huh?
Yes, it didn't sound a bit obvious.
No. Mary, answer the door.
Why don't he knock?
Every program is doing that now. Come in.
Hello.
I'd like to see Mr. Benny, please.
There he is, standing over there.
Thank you. I'm Kenny Baker.
Oh, Jack, what does Kenny Baker mean?
The man's name.
Oh. Come in.
Well, how do you do, Mr. Baker?
How do you do?
You know, I've been expecting you. You're the new singer, aren't you?
What was that?
I say, you're the new singer, aren't you?
Thank you.
Now, Mr. Baker, I,
Thank you.
Just relax. I mean, don't be nervous. Tell me, what kind of a voice have you?
I'm a tenor singer. I'm sorry.
Well, don't worry about it. Just take it easy. Step right over here to the microphone.
Yes, sir.
Be careful there. You tripped over a chair.
I guess I'm a little nervous.
You have nothing to worry about. Now, I want you to meet the members of our little company. This is Johnny Green. Johnny, this is Kenny Baker.
Hello, Mr. Baker.
How do you do? I'm sure.
Nervous, I guess.
Same to you, no doubt.
And, This is our announcer, Don Wilson.
How are you, Mr. Baker?
It's a thrill.
And he'll get over it, I guess. And this is Mary Livingston.
Hello, Tut.
Gee whiz.
Well, Kenny, how about giving us a little song? Now, I want you to feel right at home and be at ease. Remember, this is one big happy family. Depending on options, of course. Now, what are you going to sing?
If you don't mind, I'll sing The Rose in Her Hair from the motion picture, Broadway Gondolier.
I don't mind. Sing, Kenny.
Okay, Benny.
By Kenny Baker. You have a very sweet voice, Kenny. It's funny, I haven't met you before. What brought you out to Hollywood?
Oh, nothing. Just making a picture, if you don't mind.
Well, that's nice. Now, you're making a picture, eh?
Yes, anything to kill time.
Well, it is a diversion.
What's a diversion, Jack?
Quiet, Mary.
That's what I thought.
You know, young man, the only difficulty we may have on this program is, well, you see, your name is Kenny, and mine is Benny. And that might be confusing.
Well, couldn't you change yours?
Kenny Baker during his first broadcast on the Jell-O program, November 3rd, 1935. When Harry Kahn left the program following a rift with Benny, he was replaced by Bill Murrow and Ed Boulogne. And here they are on the Who's in Town Tonight broadcast from NBC, January 24th, 1940.
Cars, Chinatown, the mission bells, the traffic roar of a great city, truly a rhapsody in sound. San Francisco by the Golden Gate, always colorful, always gay, always hospitable. San Francisco is the mecca for interesting visitors from all corners of the world. We take you now to one of San Francisco's favorite meeting places, the lobby of the beautiful St. Francis Hotel, where Cliff Engel and Helen Morgan are waiting to tell us who's in town tonight.
But we're going to do a little teamwork now, and I'm going to introduce Mr. Bill Murrow and Mr. Eddie Boulogne, the scriptwriters for Jack Benny.
Let's just sing a teamwork tonight.
Come well, this is teamwork. Come
don't
on in.
Don't push me. I want to roll this mic, too. Wait a minute now. Wait a minute.
Hey, Boulogne and Murrow, can I get a picture?
Not now, bud. You know, we're on the beam.
I happen to have my arm around you, Mr. Murrow. I hope you don't mind.
I hope
we have to get in front of this mic together, after all.
You did this on purpose. You're not going to kid me.
Now, wait a minute. How long have you been a writer for Jack Benny?
Oh, about 4.5 years.
About 4.5 years. And you and Mr. Boulogne collaborate, right?
That's right.
Oh, Mr. Boulogne,
that's the way you say that word, collaborate. I didn't know how you ever
did
that. You're on your doorway. You've been bothering us all
night. Just one second.
No,
what's your name, young man?
Group Mark.
Group Mark.
Yeah, the
PTN.
PTN. Oh, yeah, the Federal Mapulti News. Yeah. For goodness sake,
tackle or something.
Please tackle for it, maybe you'll go away.
Just one picture. I've been following around all day, and let me take
one
picture. We had a terrific joke about eggs, but it's all gone now. Listen, I'm looking at a picture of Dan Garber with a fiddle that's bigger than he is. What am I going to do?
Mr. Marks, just for the moment, I hope.
Yes.
I want to know how long you and Eddie have worked together.
Yes. I think 4.5 years. It's not 4 years.
4.5 years. Well, do you get it?
And I'm older than he is. He uses 4. I say 4.5.
Don't look at that.
Let me have a picture, will you, boys?
No,
go away.
Tell me.
That's an order.
Tell me, how do you work up these scripts? Do you get an idea and then work from there, or do you just sit down and start to write and suddenly it happens?
Well, that's up to you, Edmund. I don't know how it goes.
Well, it happened as a rule about as suddenly as this broadcast has happened.
Yeah. Only they're much funnier. That's why we work.
Yeah. Well, you're giving us a lot of hope on this
tonight. Well,
how about a picture?
Let's have them go away.
After all, you know.
Well, who is what's known as the idea man here? I mean, which of the two? Who
is the idea man?
This photographer, he thinks of everything.
They must be, good. No, but who
I wish I could give them a mural and it's beautiful. They won't let me in. For 3 days I've been trying to get in there.
Hey, I'd like to take a picture of you in that room.
Would you?
Standing up.
I'm going to get a question in here about the Jack Benny script if I have to yell.
All right.
Well, I want to know is this. Do you have an idea?
Where did Constance Moore go?
Absolutely no use. Constance Moore is right here. You can see her in just a moment.
Oh.
Now, wait a minute. I want to ask you something. About your Jack Benny dramas. How do you go about writing those?
Giving us so much information, I mean, up till now. It just seems...
Are you both Hollywood boys by birth or by adoption?
No, by accident. No one was ever born in Hollywood. That just happened.
From,
people
Bill?
Came there after that.
Where'd you come from, Bill?
I come from Chicago.
Chicago. How about you?
I come from East Chicago. I'm in Stratford, Connecticut.
I come from Petaluma.
Well, to the best of my ability, I've tried to get a few questions answered here about the Jack Benny Show, but I want to tell you that I wish you all the success in the world on your show, Sunday night.
Couldn't NBC give us another 15 minutes? We didn't even get started.
We'd love to. If you'll just step out of the way, I'm coming right on the air.
Hold it, Mr. Warren. I want a picture.
All right, Cliff, if you can.
And now who says that judge writers don't laugh at their own jokes? Get it. How do you like that? Well, it was very fine, but there's one more person from this same Benny Crew column that I thought I'd like to introduce because he used to be a very well-known radio entertainer, still very well remembered around these parts. Murray Bullen.
Murray Bullen.
I don't want to pick
you.
No, thank you very much. Well, Murray, I only brought you back, not because you were as
Well, not because you were a drug runner, but because it's nice to see you back in the old hometown.
Well, I'm away. Well, I'm no gag rider, Cliff, as you remember. I mean, more or less a San Francisco gag rider, but these guys, when I'm around with them, I'm no gag rider. Please, remember that.
You put the old Marion Harris completely. Harris is in New York.
Harris is in New York and has another partner doing the old things with him that I used to do when we were at San Francisco. And I have been away from here 1, 3, 4 years.
What are you doing about the show?
What am I doing
the troop now?
I'm the necessary evil to this Benny show. I'm the agency producer.
Producer? That's where the money comes from, right, Murray?
That's right.
Murray, as the agency man representing the sponsor, what percentage of the gags originally written into the script before it's cut really seem to click among those present when you first read it?
Well, that's the guide for the whole thing. The gags originally written and read at first reading are the nucleus of the whole show. Then Bill and Eddie.
The nucleus. Can I get a picture?
Oh, I've never seen one of the nucleus. Get
that.
Mrs. Cliffangle.
And Helen Morgan.
Right.
Here
you are.
Good night.
Who's in town tonight came to you from San Francisco. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Beloine and Murrow left the program in 1943. Benny writer George Balzer recalls.
Bill Morrow was drafted into the Army. Eddie Beloine wanted to move on to pictures. They were with Jack about 5 years, I believe. And then in replacing them, instead of only taking two, Jack decided to go to four. With Sam Perrin, my partner, we had worked together for a couple of years on Burns and Allen and on the Tommy Riggs Betty Lou show. I had to go to New York to meet Jack, and it was on the train that I met Mel Schlossberg, who was also joining the show at that time. And, of course, we talked about a lot of things. We talked about Bill Morrow and Ed Beloine, who were Jack's previous writers. Bill had been drafted into the Army and had to leave the show, but a wonderful fella. Everybody was Bill's friend. The reason we had to go to New York was because Jack was in North Africa with the USO entertaining the armed forces. And he hadn't arrived back yet for the opening of the season, which we were going to do in New York. And I recall I was, while Milt had gone to Brooklyn, I was in my hotel room now, all alone. And after a while, I felt a little lonesome. So I picked up the phone, I called the desk clerk, and I told him what was on my mind, and he says, yeah. He says, you go up to the 15th floor, gave me a room number. So I took his directions, I caught the elevator, went up, walked down the hall, and knocked on the door. It's a long pause, I knocked on the door again, and then suddenly the door opened, and there, standing in a very sheer dressing gown, was John Tackerberry. John was also joining the show, and I had never met him. And he explained to me that the reason he didn't answer the door immediately was because he had been in the shower. And from the puddles on the floor and his accent, I could tell that he was a wet Texan. And that takes care of three of us. Another writer at that time was Cy Howard. Cy was not really a writer on the Benny Show. Now, to clarify that, he did join us at that time, but within the first few weeks, he was not comfortable with the way we worked, and I believe he had a chance to take a part in a play or something. And after about 4 or 5 weeks, he was gone. In later years, I had much success in doing pictures and so forth. But he was not really a writer on the Benny Show. So that takes care. There's myself, Milt, Tack, and, of course, my old partner, Sam Perrin, whom I met on the, on the Burns and Allen Show. On October 10th, 1943, we went on the air with that opening Benny show of that season. And fortunately, with all new writers, it got great reviews. Everybody was very happy. during that first year, we were at NBC. After a Saturday rehearsal, we were cutting a script. We were two or three minutes over, and we were trying to get it down to size, strengthen a little bit here and there by putting in a new joke if needed, so forth. And we came to about page four, I think, and Jack's looking at his script, and he says, "Fellas, in here, I want something, I want to take this joke out, and I want something a little bit stronger." And from myself and Sam, my partner, and Milt and Tack, silence. He said, "I want something that kind of pays off real good." From us, silence. He said, "I want something that really is really worth this big buildup." There's a long silence. And I leaned over to him and I said, "Jack, we'll get you another joke." And he says, "Oh, you agree with me, huh?" I said, "No, but it's possible that the four of us could be wrong."
Say, Jackson, what's the Wilson laughing about?
Who knows?
Go ahead, Don. Tell Phil a joke.
Okay, get this, Phil. Last week, Fred Allen...
Don, hold your stomach still. You're air conditioning the theater. Please.
Well, come on, Don. Lay it on me. Let me hear it. Well, Fred Allen called Jack the Surrey with no fringe on top. Isn't that terrific?
What's a Surrey? There you are. It's supposed to be a gag, Phil.
A gag? Why, my baby can think of better jokes than that, and she's only
2 years old. Remember, I figured out her age for you last week, remember?
Oh, yeah. And you know something? Jackson, Alice knew it all the time.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, hubba, hubba, hubba. Well, Phil, it's a shame. You know, Phil, it's really a shame, you know. You're such an intelligent-looking fellow. It's too bad you didn't have better schooling.
Well, it ain't my fault, Jackson. You see, my folks wanted me to be a great musician.
A great musician. Phil, it took you 5 years to learn how to put a nickel in a jukebox.
Well, Jack, I've never seen you put a nickel in a
jukebox. Maybe not, but I know how.
A highlight of most every Benny show. And whenever you heard that phone ring and you heard the voice say or Jack would answer the phone, "Hello, Miss Benny, this is Rochester," you knew that somebody was in trouble, and it could be either one.
"Hello, Mr. Benny, this is Rochester."
"Hello, Rochester, what do you want?"
"I'm in a lot of trouble, boss. You shouldn't have asked me to bake a loaf of bread for dinner tonight."
"Why, what happened?"
"Well, I took a small bowl and put in 2 cups of flour."
Uh-huh.
"Then I put in a cake of yeast."
Uh-huh.
"Then I added 1 cup of water and stirred it together."
"Well?"
"It looked kind of dry, so I added more water."
"I see."
"Since I added more water, I threw in another cake of yeast."
"Well, isn't that a lot of yeast?"
"That's what I thought, so I put in more water." "More flour."
More flour, I see.
"Yeah." "That made it too dry, so then I added more water."
"Rochester."
"That made it too soggy, so I put in some more yeast."
"More yeast?"
"So to balance the proportions."
"Well, you balanced that one. You didn't let it drop anyway."
"Yeah, I balanced the proportions with more flour."
"Flour?"
"That made it too dry, so I poured in a quart of champagne."
"Champagne?"
"I had to do something to break the monotony."
"Rochester, that's ridiculous, mixing champagne with flour, water, and yeast."
"We got the only loaf of bread with a bun on it."
Rochester, the person, was pretty much the Rochester that we played on the air. Eddie Anderson was his name. And he would get into things that would... Well, one thing in particular, we were down in Palm Springs. We did a lot of shows out of Palm Springs. And we had finished the script. I believe it was on a Thursday evening, we had finished writing, and we heard a bulletin on the radio that Eddie Rochester Anderson was lost at sea. So now we become worried because we knew he was going to go on a fishing trip. And an hour or two later, another bulletin came through that the Coast Guard had nothing further to report. And now it becomes a little more serious. And on through the rest of the night and the morning, more reports came in over the radio that nothing could be found. And yet somehow we had a feeling that being Rochester, it would work out. And sure enough, in about an hour comes another bulletin over the radio that he had been found, and they were now safe on shore. Now, we had the routine written, could have gone on the air with what we had, but we said, wait a minute, this thing has got national publicity. So we might as well cash in on it. This is Friday night. So we wrote a routine based on the fact that Roch had gone through this experience.
Anyway, Don, you're right about one thing. Next Wednesday is my birthday.
Well, Jack, we've done a lot of kidding about your age, but seriously, how old are you?
You're right, Don. We have done a lot of kidding. But when a man reaches a certain age, there's no use denying it. In fact, Don, there's a satisfaction in knowing you have reached that age in a distinguished and dignified manner.
Well, it's no wonder so many people have such a deep admiration for you, Jack. It takes a man of high character to accept growing old so gracefully.
Thank you.
So tell me, Jack, how old are you?
36. And now, fellas, since we're both...
Wait a minute, Jack.
Nothing wrong, kid?
All I can say is you certainly act a lot older than 36.
What?
Why, the minute it started snowing, you chased all over town trying to buy preheated underwear. Harry, Jack says he's only 36 years old.
Why, Jack Benny, do you expect...
Well, that's all I am, and I can prove it.
Oh, Jack.
Well, look, my last birthday was in 1944. Is that right?
Yes, 1944.
And I was born in...
Yes?
I was born in Waukegan. And that makes me 36.
Makes you 36.
Yeah. Jack, how does being born in Waukegan make you 36?
It's simple arithmetic. My last birthday was in 1944. I was born in Waukegan. Waukegan has 8 letters, and 8 from 44 is 36. Let's drop.
We never planned anything on the Benny Show. We never said, this is what we want to do, and then we will continue to do it. Everything was accidental. The age routine started. My partner and I were working on that phase of the script, and we had a magazine writer come in, played by Mel Blanc, to interview him, I believe it was, and when he got to the end, how old are you, Jack said, 36. And we did a routine on being 36 and worked it throughout the show and so forth. And then many times that year, we referred to being 36. Next year, we always had a birthday party on February 14th or the Sunday close to that date, because that was Jack's birthday. And he became 37. Ran that for a year. He became 38. Ran that. 39. All in order. We ran that for a year. Now the next year, it's time to be 40. And Jack says, wait a minute. He says, we can't do it. He says, there's something about 40 that isn't funny. It's just at that point, he says, we're going to stay 39. And we did for the rest of his life.
Strike program starring Jack Benny with Mary Livingston, Phil Harris, Rochester, Dennis Day, and yours truly, Don Wilson. Ladies and gentlemen, as you all know, Sunday night is a great night for comedy on NBC. One of the outstanding comedians is Fred Allen.
What?
However, it's too early for Allen, so I bring you his closest friend, Jack Benny.
Thank you. Thank you, thank you. Hello again. This is Jack Benny talking, and Don, Rose Bowl tummy. Look, I'd like to ask you something. After all these years, how can you imply that Fred Allen and I are such close friends?
Well, Jack, last year when we were in New York, Allen told me personally that of all the friends he has, if he tried to borrow money, you'd be the closest.
Fred Allen said that?
Yes, Jack, he certainly did.
Well, Don, I'm the kind of a man who likes to give credit where credit is due. And that joke deserves at least 5 seconds of silence. Will you people in the audience please bear with us?
And that isn't all Allen said. He told me that...
Wait a minute, Don. Jack isn't back yet.
Well, where is he?
While the bells were ringing, he was out in the audience telling good humor.
That was Paul Out the Marines, played by the orchestra. And now, ladies and gentlemen, inasmuch as this evening marks the halfway point of our radio season, I think it only fair that we pay tribute to the man who has contributed his invaluable services to the Jell-O Show.
Well.
A man upon whose broad shoulders rests the burden of maintaining the high comedy level of this program.
Gee.
And here he is, folks, our sound effects man, Mr. Virgil Reimer.
Hey, what is this?
Hello again, this is Virgil Reimer talking, and folks, I want to tell you this is the happiest
day
ever.
Wait a minute, what's going on here, Don?
Well, Jack, I thought the public might be sort of tired of hearing me introduce you week after week, so for a switch, I thought I'd introduce one of the men behind the scenes.
Oh, you thought you'd pull a little surprise on your old boss, huh?
You certainly fell for it.
I did at that. Well, Don, I've got a little surprise for you, too. Remember one day in New York when I was having lunch with Harry Von Zell?
Uh-huh.
And you got all upset about it and I told you not to worry?
Yes.
Well, knit your eyebrows, brother. The heat's on again. Now, let's get going with the program.
Okay. Hello again. This is Virgil Reimer talking. And, folks, a funny thing happened to me on the way...
Virgil! Go away, will you? And stick to your sound effects.
Oh, give him a chance, Jack. After all, I introduced him, so let him say a few words.
Oh, all right. Go ahead, Virgil, but make it snappy.
Thanks, chum. Ladies and gentlemen, a funny thing happened to me on the way to the studio. I was walking down the street. And the traffic was something terrible.
Oh, for Pete's sake.
When all of a sudden, a panhandler walked up and asked me for a nickel for a cup of coffee, so I gave it to him.
Oh, fine. Now listen, Virgil.
Just then, it started to rain.
Rain? The wonder it didn't thunder.
Now cut that out!
All right, Virgil, you gave the panhandler a nickel, so what happened?
It was a lead nickel, so he took out his gun and killed me. Oh. I thank you. Oh.
Thank you.
A French student. Hello, Phil.
Bonsoir, folks. Bonsoir. Hello, Jacques.
Jacques.
And Marie and Dune.
Dune? Phil, a dune is a great big pile of sand. But I guess you're right. I don't Anyway, why don't you cut out that French? The stuff you say doesn't even make sense.
Well, I learned a new one this week. Get a load of this, Jackson. Ma, orchestre, travail, don, dune, soupier.
What does that mean?
My orchestra works in the soup tureen.
Your orchestra works in the soup tureen?
Yeah, that's as close as I could get to Biltmore Bowls.
Well, why don't you run over to the Colemans and borrow a cup of... Hey, wait a minute. I haven't seen Mr. Coleman for quite a while. Hand me a cup. I'll go get the flour.
Here you are.
I'll be right back, Rochester. As long as I'm going over, I really should have brought a larger cup. Oh, well, I guess this cup will be all right. Can it be the trees that fill the breeze with rare... See, there are a lot of people out today. La, 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 la. La, 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 la. Thank you. Yeah, I better go around the back door. See, the Colemans keep their lawn nice and... Oh, isn't that cute? A garbage can shaped like an Oscar.
Oh, it's you, Mr. Benny.
Oh, hello, Sherwood. Is Mr. Coleman in?
Yes. He's in the library.
Well, could you tell him that I'd like to borrow a cup of flour?
Oh, there's no need to tell him. I'll give you the flour.
Oh, shall I come in?
That won't be necessary. I'll sift it to you through the screen door.
I have the sack right here on the shelf.
What was that? Oh, by the way, Sherwood, I tried to call Mr. Coleman on the phone this morning, but I couldn't get him. Did he change his number since I talked to him last week?
Yes, sir. 3 times.
Oh, well, I hope he got the one he liked.
Will this be enough flour, Mr. Benny?
Yes. I'm just going to use it to make a little paste. You see, I'm working on my scrapbook, and I'm sticking in the many things that have been said about me.
You save those?
Yeah.